Somewhere deep inside your mind, there's a place where dreams live. And now those dreams have the chance to come to life because USAA Life Insurance is sponsoring the Live Your Dreams sweepstakes where you could win $50,000. That's $50,000 to let those dreams out of your head and into your hands. Enter for a chance to win and view official rules at www.usaa.com/lifesweeps or call 1-800-531-LIFE.
No purchase necessary. USAA Life Insurance Company, San Antonio, Texas, and in New York, by USAA Life Insurance Company of New York, Highland Falls, New York.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Anywhere that you can find podcasts, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. If you want to advertise with us, you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any inquiries there. You can find us on Twitter @LockedOnBulls, like us on Facebook @LockedOnBulls as well. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. And Cody, the Bulls are back at 500, back in the playoffs.
21-21, technically tied for the 8 seed in the playoffs after a 108-104 win at Memphis on a Sunday night.
Late half a game out of the 5 seed.
That's true. The East is, if nothing else, really, really, really average.
It's hilarious.
A lot of teams hovering around that 500 mark. Bulls included now, like we said, at 21-21. Thanks once again to late heroics from Jimmy Butler after a big night from Doug McDermott, career-high 31 points. He was cooking early, especially in the second quarter, and Jimmy finished it off late. He had a pair of jumpers to give the Bulls a two-point lead twice in the last 80 seconds, I believe. The second time, Mike Conley did not respond with a jumper. Jimmy played defense on Mike Conley with the Bulls leading by 2 points and under 30 seconds left. Jimmy went out there. He wasn't guarding him most of the fourth quarter. That was Michael Carter-Williams' job. But Jimmy stepped up on the defensive end, and this is something Fred Hoiberg's pointed out Saturday night after they beat the Pelicans. Jimmy does it on both ends of the court, expends that energy. And here with the game on the line, after he weaved his way in and made a tough jumper for a two-point lead, he guarded Mike Conley, forced him into a tough three-pointer. I kind of thought his foot looked like on the line. The game notes said it was a three-point shot. But whatever, he missed it because Jimmy forced him into a tough shot. And the Bulls got a win they needed because they've been awful on back-to-backs this year, and now they swept one.
Yeah, this is the first time that they've swept a back-to-back all season.
They were actually, I believe, 4-14 on back-to-backs before this two-game winning streak.
Before their win over the Pelicans last night, they were 1-9.
On the back end, I'm saying...
On the front end.
Yeah, I'm saying both sides of it. 1-8, like you said, I think the other side was 3-6. So, like, they had just been so bad on that. And part of that is because, like, sometimes Dwayne Wade has been resting on this. The Bulls' bench hasn't been a strength. And when you're playing back-to-backs, it's really helpful to have a deep bench. Mm-hmm. And when you have to rely on the bench, a lot of times in the second game, maybe more so than the first one, but even if you're looking ahead to the second one and rely on that bench a little more in the first one, the Bulls' bench hasn't been productive this year often enough. I think that's part of the reason. This was a game in which Dwayne Wade did not play because he stayed back in Chicago and rested. He was tweeting about how well Doug McDermott was playing there in the second quarter. 31 points for Doug McDermott. He was spectacular.
That's right. And if you want to count him as bench production, he gave them a lot off the bench. And the reason he gave them a lot off the bench was because Fred Hoiberg decided to start Paul Zipser again tonight for the second time in three games.
And he started Paul Zipser for reasons that aren't exactly clear.
It's just really funny looking at the progression of Paul Zipser's, because, you know, he's basically only been a garbage time player this whole season, but his last three games, he starts against the Knicks in
34 minutes,
DNP in the game against New Orleans yesterday, and then he starts, but only basically, he played, you know, basically his first shift of the half in each half, and then not at all the rest of the way, and didn't really do much tonight.
Well, only Doug McDermott could answer this question. We are not in Memphis, but do you think it motivated him a little bit?
Probably. I just don't understand what Hoiberg is doing with the Zipser thing.
Well, yeah, that's a little confusing to me as well.
Like, in theory...
And multiple people made this point, like, just, if you're not going to start Doug... The theory is, his idea is that playing Doug with Rondo on the second unit helps Rondo because he has a shooter on his wing. It helps Doug because Doug has a point guard who's pretty darn good at finding open people when they're open. Problem is, usually when Rondo's playing with guys that can't shoot, no one's open, and then it's just a disaster. But when Doug is spotting up, Rondo's good at finding him. And it should be noted that Doug scored 20 points in the second quarter. Three of those buckets and two of those three-pointers were assisted by Rondo finding him in good spots. So, Fred Hoiberg's idea worked out in that regard. But at the same time, like, just either start McDermott, start Denzel Valentine instead of Paul Zipser, right? Start somebody that you've invested more in who's going to ostensibly maybe be part of the future.
Right, and I know the front office likes Zipser a lot. That's something that they've talked about before. But, you know, Doug McDermott, first-round pick that they traded with several picks for. Denzel Valentine, for lottery pick this year. They really have to, you know, if you're going to give one of the young guys a chance, I feel like those guys are the priority, unless it's something like, you know, Chris Felicio getting minutes over Bobby Portis, where he's shown more. Zipser hasn't shown anything.
Yeah, and I think, like, Doug McDermott said this, Jaren Grant said it, but at various times this year with Dwayne Wade resting, with a few guys being injured, Michael Carter-Williams obviously was out for a long time, and then the Bulls having this illness, the flu bug. Like, there's been a lot of kind of turnover at times in the lineup at points throughout the year, and McDermott and Grant have said, like, when you're not looking over your shoulder, like, even if it's something that is more natural, you'd expect, like, even if it's not in a diabolical manner that you're looking over your shoulder because Dwayne Wade or Jimmy Butler's on the bench and you think they're going to come right back in, just knowing that no matter what happens that night, you're going to be able to play through mistakes no matter what, it's helpful to find that rhythm. And, like, here's a chance for Denzel Valentine to maybe find that rhythm a little more because Dwayne Wade's resting in this game. Maybe spot start him, maybe give him more minutes. But instead, Paul Zipser plays 15 minutes, Denzel Valentine plays 10 minutes, and there's opportunity wasted for Denzel Valentine to find that rhythm and learn to play through mistakes, which is weird to me because that's the only way young guys get good is to play through mistakes.
Right, and they have to have some kind of continuity with what their role is. You mean, you know, you look at Paul Zipser, like, going from starting to DNP back to starting. And then, you know, you look at a guy like Jaren Grant, he was getting really heavy minutes before Rondo gets back in the rotation, and now Rondo gets back in the rotation, Jaren just doesn't even, has not even played the last couple of games. It's like, okay, like, these guys have no idea on any given night what their role is going to be.
Yeah, I'm okay with the continuity lacking for the younger guys, because don't you feel like that's part of what being a young NBA player is? I mean, maybe even in any industry when you're young, you know, like,
right,
you're trying to prove yourself in various regards and responsibilities and burdens, so I'm okay with that, but, like, I feel like obviously veterans need the continuity, which is why I think the Rajon Rondo thing, the communication, the lack thereof in what his role needs to be, benching him five games, plugging him back into the second unit only when people got sick and everyone had the flu, is a little weird when you're not 100% up front on the same page with him, which no matter what the Bulls say, they haven't been, because if Rondo had been communicated his role exactly, he would have said they'd been more clear. You know what I mean? He's
right.
He's pretty much a straight shirt. Obviously, he wants to control the narrative, help himself out a little bit. But he's not a guy sitting there lying through his teeth in any manner. He just calls BS as he sees it. So, like, to me, you got to be clear with your veterans, what they are. I'm okay with the younger guys getting yo-yoed in and out of the lineup. But it felt like opportunity wasted not to get Denzel Valentine a few more minutes. But we're really breaking down the micro here, in a sense of what might have gone wrong in this game, while looking at the bigger picture of the macro years down the line, who's going to be part of the Bulls. But in this night, they won the game. Like, that's good. That's important. Some of the things Hoiberg did do worked out pretty well. Jimmy Butler, again, like, only 16 points, and a lot of them came late there kind of in the fourth quarter on those jumpers and stuff. Like, he stepped up again with the game on the line. This is becoming a trend. Like, we can look in these numbers and delve deeper later in the week and such, how good Jimmy is in the fourth quarter. But just his maturation process, Sean, he really feels like an alpha dog, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And he's, again, doing it on both ends of the floor. This is something that we've been talking about with him.
Yeah, and on this night, like, Jimmy, that people are tweeting that he was yapping to the fans in the front row, which Jimmy's never afraid to do, you know what I'm saying? But, again, like, he's grabbing, no pun intended here, but he's grabbing the bull by the horns in this season, really. And Dwayne Wade on multiple occasions had told Jimmy, you know, like, you got to take over in the fourth quarter when you're called upon, because that's what this team needs. And Dwayne Wade obviously finished and closed the game off strong Saturday night with those 17 points in the fourth quarter. But Jimmy Butler's a guy who just time and again is getting it done. And there's several layers of superstardom. And I think we mentioned this in the Saturday's podcast after the win against the Pelicans was, if he can drag him to the playoffs, that's a real gold star on that resume for being a superstar. Dragging a team that's pretty poor and overmatched in other areas at times. It doesn't fit well together in the sense of shooting. If he can drag them to the playoffs, that's a sign of superstardom. If Jimmy Butler can just dominate fourth quarters like he has been, dominating the final few stretches, final few minutes of the game down the stretch, like, that's another huge gold star on the resume for superstardom, is it not?
It really is, and, you know, just to update, it's a little bit less of a, you know, the gap is closed a little bit, but still, you know, the Bulls' net rating is plus 2.7 when Jimmy's on the floor this season and minus 10.1 when he is off the floor.
That's just ridiculous. And, he's so consistent. I mean, they've just given him the point guard role in the fourth quarter, you know what I mean?
Like, which I think long-term might be the thing to do.
I wonder if what I would like to see, too, like, it's fun. I mean, I may have mentioned this, but when Jimmy's, like, slicing through the defense and has the ball, he's not always, like, just looking to score. Like, he's looking to find teammates. When they put him in that pick-and-roll action again and again and again, he's slicing through that defense. I made a reference, like, at times he looks like Steve Nash in 2007 when Steve Nash would just, like, dribble through the paint just for the sake of dribbling through the paint for, like, entertainment's sake to run a defender in circles. Jimmy's not quite doing that, obviously, but he is getting into the paint, drawing defenders, getting him out of position, and then immediately looking to teammates. And another big play in this game was Jimmy found Michael Carter-Williams after drawing two defenders. Michael Carter-Williams late made a good pass to Taj Gibson for a big dunk. So he's doing that again and again. And the Bulls went with a ton of Jimmy Butler, Michael Carter-Williams pick and roll, which is kind of weird because Michael Carter-Williams isn't going to dive to the hoop on a roll, and he's not like a pick-and-pop guy because we know he can't shoot, but Jimmy does draw that defense, and if the ball ends up in Michael Carter-Williams' hands, the Bulls are comfortable with MCW making decisions passing because, I mean, that's one of the things he's pretty good at. Like, he sees the floor fairly well.
And by the way, we should just probably talk about MCW a little bit. He, you know, Fred Hoiberg said after the game, according to the reporters who were there, that this was his best game with the Bulls, and I haven't looked at the numbers, like, game by game, but I would tend to agree. I think he was overwhelmingly more good than bad tonight. He, you know, had 14 points, shot efficiently, 7 rebounds, only 2 turnovers. But, you know, it just felt like a lot of different times, you know, he was getting rebounds just kind of on hustle plays. He was making the right play on offense. He didn't get a lot of assists. He got a hockey. Do we count that as a hockey assist? The ball that he throws off Robin Lopez's face for Taj to get.
We're going to might have to go back and check that. But that was entertaining because Robin Williams got the ball thrown off.
You said Robin Williams.
Oh goodness!
There's a huge difference between Robin Williams and Robin Lopez.
R.I.P. Robin Williams. R.I.P. To getting my Michael Carter Williams and Robin Lopez's mixed up. That's going to go up there with the Denzel Washington.
I'm surprised we haven't had more of those this year.
I'm surprised Neil Funk hasn't dropped a Robin Williams on the broadcast.
Well, he does go with Michael Carter.
Yeah, it's very true. That's weird. Why I'm surprised. So apologize for that that free entertainment. I'm actually not going to apologize for, I guess.
But, this is what people come to the Locked On Bulls podcast
That's true.
For.
So Carter Williams threw the ball off of Lopez, the side of his head, right into Taj Gibson's hands, basically.
For a dunk.
And then Robin Lopez pointed at the scores table immediately that he wanted the assist, and he was pointing the next possession still, which is just hilarious.
Yeah, and he actually had a quote. This is from Casey Johnson, who is in Memphis. He said that Robin Lopez says, "Some people play the game. I like to innovate." Which is such a good quote, and that's exactly... I mean, I love covering Robin. He's such a funny dude.
That is truly remarkable there. But back to MCW. Oh,
and Casey
quick.
Also says that McDermott said that he worked on sets with Rondo yesterday because he knows that he'll be playing more with him. So it sounds like Rondo is going to stay in kind of the second unit role, kind of coming off the bench, playing with shooters.
Yeah, the Bulls are throwing everything in MCW's court kind of there.
Yeah.
To start. And
well, the thing is, because there's a chance that he's going to be with the Bulls this past this season, and there's zero chance that Rondo's going to be with the
Bulls. That gets at the bigger picture, and this is something that we'll have plenty of time in the offseason to talk about, because if the Bulls do make the playoffs, I don't think either one of us see them going past the first round,
right,
which will leave us plenty of time again to discuss. But I don't know that Michael Carter-Williams fits very well alongside Jimmy Butler, because he can't shoot, and he's a little bit of the idea where, like, he needs to facilitate for others, but the Bulls are better when Jimmy facilitates. And I actually like how Jaren Grant attacks the hoop on a straight line pretty well. And I think he can fit alongside Jimmy, not saying as a frontline starter or anything like that, but he can be out there with Jimmy And Jimmy drawing those defenders, I think, opens up a strength of Grant's, and that's that he can get to the hoop quickly and go hard if he has a little bit of space and room and opportunity. And I think Jimmy draws that, whereas Jaren Grant doesn't need the ball in his hands anyway because he doesn't have good enough ball handling skills yet. Like, he gets dogged and looks really uncomfortable with the ball if he's at half court and someone's picking him up like 75 feet or something, you know. So I think Jaren Grant actually fits alongside Jimmy a little better than Michael Carter-Williams. But Mike Carter-Williams is a better defender, obviously, and probably he sees the game a little better. But just the way the strengths work, that seems to me like something. So I'd actually like to see Grant get a few more minutes besides Butler. But there is the idea, too, of we've liked seeing the Butler-Wade being in the point guard role and then having McDermott out there still. Do you think at any point this year, Fred Hoiberg has closed games with two big men, McDermott, Wade, and Butler, but do you think he might ever start them and, like, try to play in, what, 18, 20 minutes together in a game?
I mean, it's possible. Maybe, you know, if MCW gets hurt again or if Rondo gets out of the rotation again and they decide to, start Doug and go in that direction. I mean, it's so hard to predict what they're going to do with their rotations at all this season because they've just been so all over the place.
Yeah, like, that's half the fun, though, isn't it? Like, it's like roulette, you know, like, who the heck's Hoiberg going to start tonight? Like, just throw Paul Zipser back in there. And who knows what'll be moving forward. Obviously, Dwayne Wade back. Don't expect Paul Zipser to start whatsoever. Like, Paul Zipser only gets to start when Jimmy is sick or Dwayne Wade is resting, basically. I think those are the rules. Them's the rules, right?
I guess so. I mean, for now, this is, I mean, it's such a weird, way of doing things. And the Zipser thing is just hilarious to me.
Well, yes. But if the Bulls are going to make the playoffs, I feel like this Paul Zipser thing needs to end really quickly.
Yes.
And that's still their goal.
Hey, they're one and one in games where Paul Zipser starts. They're 500, baby.
It does seem fitting that they'd be 500. And they have a stretch coming up here. They host Dallas on Tuesday at Atlanta.
Pretty winnable.
Host the Kings next Saturday.
Pretty winnable.
At Orlando.
Winnable.
Host Atlanta. Host Miami. Host the 76ers before they go on that really tough Western Conference road trip. I know we've said on multiple occasions, like, this is a big month, a big stretch for the Bulls, always with the idea of can they make the playoffs in mind. But this would classify as another one. You know, these next, what, here, 7 games? They need to go, like, 5-2 at least. Something
yeah,
like
they,
that.
Yeah,
they can't muddle through this at 3-4 and then go on that Western Conference road trip that might be brutal and then come back and all of a sudden you're 4 or 5 games below 500. They have to take care of business coming up.
Right, and 3 of the worst teams in the league, Dallas, Miami, and Philadelphia, you can't lose any of those games. And, you know, Atlanta's the only one of those teams where I look at it. They lost to Atlanta the first time they played this season, but Atlanta has also...
It's competitive.
Yeah. It was competitive, and Atlanta has also taken some steps back since then. They look really good at the beginning of the season. The Orlando one, I think...
steps back, you mean traded Kyle Korver a key piece of the team.
Right. And I was fine with the Korver trade. I still don't buy it. They're not going to trade Millsap before the deadline. But the Orlando game, to me, is a litmus test because that's a team that's kind of snot out of the playoff race the way that Miami and Philadelphia are in the East. But it's a team that is below the Bulls. And a team they should beat. They blew them out pretty easily when they played in Chicago at the beginning of the season. So I feel like they should... If they win that game, they're in okay shape.
Yeah. Obviously, the big storyline out of the first year of Fred Hoiberg's tenure was they didn't make the playoffs because they always did that under Tibbs. They even did that those couple years as like 7 or 8 seed under Vinny
Del Negro.
As ugly as that era might have been too, whatever you think. But they're still aiming for the playoffs. Casey Johnson of the Tribune wrote a nice midseason reflections piece.
Mm-hmm.
And in it he mentioned, this is very much so worth mentioning. It had some columnish aspects to it. So it wasn't like a breaking news, hard report, Fred Hoiberg will be back next year. But he said, expect Fred Hoiberg to be back basically no matter what for training camp the start of next year. And the same goes for Gar Forman, pretty much.
Yeah, and I wasn't surprised at all by the report or by the idea that Hoiberg is going to be back. I think I've said for a while, you know, ever since the hot seat stuff that Mark Stein reported a couple weeks ago, that I would expect Fred to, who knows beyond that, but I would expect Fred to start this coming training camp as the Bulls coach, just because it would not make financial sense for them to fire him with that much time left on his contract.
Yeah, he'll have, even after he completes this year, he'll have 3 years and about $15 million left on that deal. And you'd be hard-pressed to find an NBA coach in recent times, maybe go back as far as you want, I don't care, that has been given a roster more ill-suited for what he wants to do than Fred Hoiberg. I know there are coaches who are hired by poor teams, like, for example, Brett Brown in Philadelphia. He probably never gets to do what he really wants those first couple of years because his roster's so bad.
He's never going to have an above 500 coaching record in his career, by
yeah,
the way.
Poor group. Who has... I mean, there's a guy... I mean, we could talk about that more when the Sixers come to the United Center and stuff, but, like, there's a guy who has handled adversity as well as any coach in the NBA because he was trotted out there for, what, two full seasons?
Three.
Three full seasons to take the beating of the organization as they were awful and Sam Hinkie wouldn't talk to the media. Like, he's the guy that took it every day and handled it so well. But there are teams that are bad and coaches that get put in tough spots. For a team that expects to contend, can you think of any coach that has a roster more ill-suited for what they want to do? For a team that's, when they initially hired him, they were saying it's the last year of their championship window, and they at least had aspirations of should have been a playoff team. You know what I mean? And this year, they're still competing for the playoffs. That's their goal. Like, I can't think of anyone else that has been dealt a more difficult hand, kind of, for what they want to do.
Yeah, it's just really, and I think a lot of that still falls on the management. And they, you know, they should be held accountable for it. I don't know what that means, and it seems like all indications are that Gar and Pax are both not going anywhere anytime soon, but, you know, you can't look at this roster. I don't think Fred has done a great job by any means, but you can't look at this roster and say that their disappointing last couple of seasons are all his fault. You know, at a certain point, a lot of it falls on management.
Yeah, and I mean, it's weird too, I think, for Fred. Again, this is probably another off-season combo that could be an entire podcast. He was brought to Chicago to win immediately. He wasn't brought for his young player development. And I don't know what they thought about his young player development either, because they didn't talk about that a lot when he was hired, because such a veteran team. They lauded his offense, his communication skills, and his ability to kind of assimilate and have continuity for a group that's a veteran group that has talent. You know what I mean?
And exactly none of those things came true in his first year.
Exactly. And now they're shifting into what may be more of an era of player development for the Bulls next year, plausibly. If Dwayne Wade opts out of his contract and he doesn't come back, is next year not a lot about player development and building around Jimmy with young guys?
I think Wade is going to opt in, by the way. Okay. I mean, there's a different conversation that we can have later on down the line, but...
And even if he does, though, those young guys are still important. Not nearly.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's obviously 32, 34 minutes a night more for young guys if he were to leave, but rather than come back. But that is something that's going to hover, how well these young guys come along in the second half of the season. And I think maybe the most entertaining thing watching will be, can Jimmy Butler carry the Bulls into the playoffs? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And because he's just been so spectacular and brilliant. Night after night after night. The most important part of the second half of the season, you could argue, is the development of Doug McDermott, Jaren Grant, Denzel Valentine, Chris Felicio, Nico Mirotic. What can they get out of him? I mean, am I wrong there?
Yeah, and then the other thing to watch is what happens at the trade deadline if they decide to move on from Taj Gibson, who I wouldn't expect to be re-signed next summer.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff to keep an eye on. I think that touched on most everything. The Bulls will be off Monday.
And so will we.
So will we. We'll be back after they host the Mavs on Tuesday night. We assume it's a revenge game for the Bulls because they lost by 25
in
Dallas.
Losing to Dallas twice in the same season would be such a bad look.
That'd be an awful look. We got a mini Ames reunion, Ames Mafia reunion with Harrison Barnes.
That's right.
Should be back at the United Center. So looking forward to that. We're going to see if Rajon Rondo can break his one-game streak of throwing towels at coaches when they play the Mavs.
Misplacing towels around coaches.
Misplacing, displacing, letting towels fall at the feet of coaches. Whatever it was, I'm not sure we'll ever know, but the great towel episode of early December when the Bulls season got a lot more entertaining, I think, at that point for sure. But the Bulls, always, as always, back to 500. That's kind of the name of the Fred Hoiberg era at this point. I think they're, they're two games above 500 in the Hoiberg era now.
Right, because they were 42-40 last year.
Yeah, a couple days ago, they were exactly, I think, 61-61 in the Hoiberg era. But back to 500 in this season. Half game out, like you said, of the five spot in the East. So right there, that big 4-5 matchup could be waiting if they go on a mini run. You know what I mean? Or they could be out of the playoffs altogether. Like we said, they don't take care of business in these next couple of weeks with a pretty easy stretch of seven games coming up. Would expect Jimmy Butler to keep going really hard, play brilliant basketball, and probably lead them to some success here in the next couple of weeks. But as always, you can follow Sean on Twitter at Hike and myself at Cody Westerlund. We're on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. We're also on Facebook with Locked On Bulls. You can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any advertising inquiries. Always, always welcome, as well as any basketball questions. I think we promise we are going to get to some of these questions in the queue later in the week.
We have a couple off sending days. Us
on Twitter. We appreciate those. We do promise we'll get to those. As always, please subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. You can go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Make sure you do that. You can also find us on Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On NBA, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Football, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Locked On NFL Draft. All 30 NBA teams have their own Locked On podcast. All 32 NFL teams have their own Locked On podcast. The conference championships are coming up this next weekend, so if your team is still in it, you can listen to that. If your team is not still in it, you can listen to some of the draft content.
28 teams now battling for young talent in the NFL draft that you can listen to.
Absolutely. So make sure you check out any of those, and we will be back with you on Tuesday. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.